If you've ever had dizziness or vertigo, you know how scary it can be. So on today's episode, we're going to talk about it. Happy Friday. My name is Connor Collins. I'm a registered massage therapist and sports injury therapist practicing 45 minutes outside of Toronto, Ontario, and Canada. And welcome to the Concast, a podcast where we discuss all things health, wellness, and injuries in an attempt to better understand the human body. This is episode number 45, and our topic of discussion today is going to be something that many people experience. It can be really unnerving and scary, frankly, when you experience it, and that is dizziness or vertigo. So hopefully during today's podcast, we get a better understanding of what dizziness and vertigo is, what are some of the common causes, and then I will leave you with a few things and resources that you can seek out if, in fact, you are dealing with an issue of dizziness or vertigo that has yet to be resolved. So before we get into the specifics of each cause of dizziness or vertigo, I think it's important to define each of these things, as often dizziness will be interchanged with vertigo, or unsteadiness will be interchanged with dizziness. And often if you're somebody that's experienced this, understanding what you're truly experiencing will be able to help you relay information to the professional that you're seeing. So first, let's talk about dizziness. Dizziness is the sensation of disturbed or spatial orientation without false or distorted sense of motion. So what is false or distorted sense of motion? This might mean that you're feeling as though you're moving when you're not, or you're feeling steady when you're moving. It can go the other way. So you temporarily lose your awareness in space, but this matches up with the motion or motions that you're experiencing. There's no distortion of motion. Now, vertigo is a little bit different than dizziness, where you have the sensation of self-motion when no motion is occurring. And what this means is that you might be lying in bed, you might be sitting still, you might be standing still, and you have this sense that you are moving. And most commonly in vertigo, it is a rotational movement. So this might be the experience of always the room is rotating or spinning towards the left or right. And a large majority of the time, you are also experiencing something known as oscillopsia. And oscillopsia is you can visually see your environment spinning. If you open your eyes, you see the room spinning. It can move closer or further away from you. It can tilt or tip. And these are all variations of what's known as oscillopsia, which is very commonly experienced with vertigo. Now, the last definition that doesn't get talked about as much is imbalance or unsteadiness, which is very hard to differentiate at times from dizziness. Now, imbalance or unsteadiness is the feeling of being unstable while in a seated position, standing or walking. The difference between that and dizziness is your loss or impairment of spatial orientation. You might temporarily, in dizziness, lose your awareness of where you are in space, whereas in imbalance or unsteadiness, you know where you are, you just feel unstable or unsteady. Now, when we look at all three of these definitions, there are a number of different causes of both dizziness and vertigo, but they can be broken up into two primary categories, central or peripheral. Now, when we think about central, we're thinking about inside of the brain, or all of the elements of the brain. Now, both sides of the brain are communicating with each other. You have deeper aspects of the brain communicating with more superficial aspects. And in central issues of vertigo or dizziness most prominently, these issues can arise in the cortex, which is our more conscious level of spatial orientation, or it can also happen in the brainstem, which is more of our automatic processes that go on in the background that are controlling things like balance, coordination. And the reality of this is this is always a fine dance that's going on between the brain and the more conscious level centers and the more subconscious level centers. You then have peripheral causes of dizziness or vertigo. And in peripheral causes, this is an issue in what's known as the vestibular apparatus, which is an apparatus or a piece of anatomy that sits within your inner ear. And this is consistently interacting with your brain to help control your orientation in space, help with things like linear acceleration or moving front and back, or angular acceleration, which are coupled movements. For example, if you were to bend forward and tie your shoe. Now, also aspects of peripheral dizziness and vertigo are the peripheral musculoskeletal receptors in our body, or the receptors that are involved in our muscles, in our tendons, in our joint capsules. And those are consistently relaying information to our brain and can be affected in certain circumstances and perpetuate causes of dizziness and vertigo. So those are the two major categories by which dizziness, vertigo, or unsteadiness or imbalance would fall into. Central being within the brain, peripheral being outside of the brain, in the inner ear, or in some of the musculoskeletal receptors relaying information into the brain. You can also have circumstances in individuals where it may be both. It may be a central and a peripheral driver, which only leads to the complexity of this condition that's already quite difficult to try and manage. So let's talk about some of the primary reasons in the central nervous system that create dizziness or vertigo. So there are really two major categories in the central nervous system that create dizziness or vertigo. The first is central vestibular dizziness or vertigo. And this means that there may be an issue going on in the cerebellum, which controls our coordination. It may be an issue going on in the brainstem or the cortex. And this might be as a result of something as simple as aging. We know that our central ability to discriminate balance deteriorates as we age. It might be from something like a stroke that was suffered, or a transient ischemic attack, or another vascular issue or vascular disease. And these are just some of the examples that can cause the brain to lose its ability to control its relationship between all of the information that it's relaying and lead to symptoms of dizziness or vertigo. Now, in the research, this is accounting for about 13% of all dizziness and vertigo, both central and peripheral. The other central driving factor for dizziness or vertigo is what's known as a vestibular migraine. And vestibular migraines are accounting for about 12% of all dizziness and vertigo that is suffered. Now, vestibular migraines are a special type of migraine, and migraine is a broad definition of a type of headache. Now, there are very specific subsets by which somebody gets diagnosed with a vestibular migraine. And I don't want you to take these diagnostic criteria to mean that you have one. This is only for information's sake. And I will say that dizziness and vertigo is incredibly complex. And if you are suffering from either of these symptoms, you do need to be evaluated by somebody that's well-versed in this. And don't be going and concluding that I have a vestibular migraine or I have dizziness that's coming from my neck. When we talk about a vestibular migraine, first and foremost, there needs to be at least 5 episodes of dizziness or vertigo lasting anywhere from 5 minutes to 72 hours in length. This might not mean that you're experiencing the symptoms for that whole entire duration of time, but over the course of 5 minutes to 72 hours, you're experiencing these symptoms. when we look at vestibular migraines, at least 50% of vestibular migraines have one of the following three features: a headache at the same time that is associated with two of the following four characteristics: a single-sided headache that's pulsating in quality, moderate to severe in intensity, so 7 or greater out of 10 in intensity, and aggravated by routine physical activity. So in 50% of these vestibular migraine headaches, you will have two of the following four of those. You may also have photophobia or phonophobia, which is sensitivity to light or sound, and a visual aura preceding the headache or the dizziness. And a visual aura might be spots in your vision. You might see shadows, you might see colors. The other thing that's usually present is a history of migraines. So if this is something that you're experiencing for the first time, the assumption is not that you are experiencing vestibular migraine. Everything else would need to be ruled out first. But if you have a history of migraine headaches, this might be something that is causing your vertigo or dizziness. Again, this is a central cause, accounting for about 12% of all vertigo or dizziness that suffer. If we then look to our peripheral system, so the peripheral system again is the inner ear apparatus and how that communicates with the brain, as well as the musculoskeletal system. 16% of all peripheral vertigo or dizziness is caused by something known as benign paroxysmal positional vertigo, or BPPV. Now, what BPPV is inside your inner ear, you have these semicircular canals, as well as this central part of the inner ear known as the utricle and the saccule. And in the utricle and the saccule, you have these little stones. And in BPPV, what can happen is those stones can move into the semicircular canals. This then gives false information to the inner ear that you are moving. And as a result of that, you experience vertigo, which is the sensation of movement when you are not moving. You may also experience oscillopsia, or those visual disturbances in your environment. Now, the majority of BPPV happens in middle-aged to elderly individuals, where the number one cause for BPPV in younger people would be a head trauma. So this might be a motor vehicle accident, a slip and fall, or hit to the head. So it doesn't mean that it can't happen in younger people, but without trauma, it's less likely. Some characteristics of this are typically directional vertigo or activity-dependent vertigo. So for example, if I rotate my head to the right, or I'm rotating in bed towards the right, I will experience this aggressive vertigo. However, it's usually short-lived. It's usually anywhere from 30 seconds to a minute, and then it will calm down again. And people will learn how to avoid this position. They will alter their movement patterns around what they're experiencing. This might come and go a little bit. It might be aggravated by, like I said, certain movements, but it may subside for a couple of months and then come back. And these types of vertigo are typically relieved quite successfully with reposition techniques. Now, the thing that I'll say about reposition techniques is often you get people either saying, try this, I saw it on YouTube or in Facebook groups and forums, I see it a lot. And this is not something that you want to just be doing on your own blindly without a diagnosis. There are certain reposition techniques that are substantially more successful in the research than others. This is for people that are well versed in vertigo and dizziness to either perform on you or prescribe for you to do at home, which is even less done nowadays. If you are truly suffering from BPPV, reposition techniques are quite successful only after a few times. So 1 to 3 times would resolve a large majority of BPPV. It doesn't mean that it's going to resolve all of it, certainly. But if you've been suffering from vertigo or dizziness for a long period of time, 6 months to a year, you either haven't got the right reposition technique or you've been misdiagnosed, remembering that BPPV is only accounting for 16% of all dizziness and vertigo. If we now look at some lesser common causes of dizziness and vertigo, 10% is caused by Meniere's disease. Meniere's disease is a fullness in the inner ear by an abnormal accumulation of fluid known as endolymph. This might also be associated with things like ringing of the ears and hearing loss, whereas more traditional styles of vertigo do not have these common symptoms. This might be caused by something structural that's affecting draining. It might be something viral, or it might be something that's of autoimmune cause. So again, it's important to get the proper diagnosis if you are suffering from a Meniere's disease. Next, we have a unilateral or a bilateral peripheral vestibular disease. And this means that the vestibulocochlear nerve that is providing information from the ear to the brain on things like balance, dizziness, and hearing is affected, typically by a virus, but it also can be affected by certain medications. It can also be affected by things like aging. And if you look at the combination of whether one ear is affected or two ears are affected, this accounts for about 16% of all dizziness or vertigo that is suffered. Now, a vestibular condition that's somewhat related to either unilateral or bilateral peripheral vestibular disease is something known as vestibular paroxysmia, which accounts for about 3.5% of all dizziness and vertigo. This might be caused by a neuritis or inflammation of the nerve for a number of reasons. It can also be caused by things like small tumors in the ear. It can be caused by a reduction in microcirculation because of vascular diseases. But this is certainly accounting for a substantially less amount of overall dizziness and vertigo. In terms of then the inner ear, roughly about 0.5% of all dizziness and vertigo can be a abnormal structural issue within the inner ear, something known as a paralymph fistula, which is a little hole in the inner ear, or a superior canal dehiscence syndrome, which is a abnormal formation of bone within the inner ear that causes a weakness in the structure of it. But again, this is accounting for a really, really small percentage. Now, even with all of those causes of dizziness and vertigo that I've talked about, there is about 30% that remains. And within that 30%, some of these causes of dizziness are characterized as other things like progressive neurological disorders, MS, for example. The category of unknown falls into that remaining 30%. Psychiatric disorders also fall into that remaining 30%, as well as something known as somatoform dizziness, which can be psychiatric in nature, but also can be functional in nature. And so this might be where the classification of cervicogenic dizziness would fall under. Cervicogenic dizziness is a very common term used in the therapy industry to indicate that your dizziness might be coming from your neck. And at best, this might fall into the 30% category. So that would indicate that 70% of dizziness or vertigo that's suffered leans more towards being non-cervicogenic than cervicogenic. And I think that this is an important thing to recognize, in that in my industry of therapy, we default to the fact that the majority of dizziness is coming from the neck, when in fact, when you look at the global causes of dizziness and vertigo, it could fall into that category of 30% at most. So you certainly want to be trying to understand, as a therapist or even somebody that's suffering from dizziness or vertigo, that there is a lesser likelihood that the dizziness or vertigo is truly coming from the neck. And this is, again, based on certain circumstances. So when might we think that dizziness is truly coming from the neck? And the first is, there's a mechanism of injury. So the person might have a whiplash disorder. They might have a history of chronic neck pain. They might have had a slip and fall. They might have been in a car accident. They might be complaining of neck pain. This might, in fact, indicate that the symptoms of their neck pain might be associated with their dizziness or their vertigo if present at the same time. Now, if they have a substantial mechanism of injury, so they've just come in and they've experienced a car accident, the first thing that I want to think about is, does this person need imaging? Do they need an x-ray? And for me to determine that, I typically go to something known as the Canadian Cervical Spine Rule Out. And this is a set of guidelines to determine whether somebody needs an x-ray or help you. Certainly it's not bulletproof, but it is a good guideline to follow. So some of the guidelines that they will suggest is the person greater than 65 years of age? Is there that dangerous mechanism, so car accidents, slip and fall from a height? Is there numbness in either of the limbs, the arms and the legs? Is the person unable to rotate the neck 45 degrees or has something known as Russ sign, where they come in and they're holding their chin up with their hands? And or is there midline tenderness? So when I push on the spinous processes of the neck, does that recreate maybe symptoms of numbness and tingling or exquisite tenderness? Now, if there are more than less of these in my series of questioning for the patient, then I'm going to be referring them back out for imaging. So if this was a car accident and they haven't been to the hospital, then I'm going to refer them to the hospital or urgent care. From there, I want to make sure that I assess the neck in terms of range of motion. So this is the assumption that the images have been done and are negative. I want to assess the neck for ranges of motion. I want to assess it from a stability standpoint and a neurological standpoint. And if I find any red flags, I want to refer that patient back to the family doctor. From there, a thorough physical and vestibular exam should be done by somebody that's well-versed in managing dizziness. And if you're unable to do that, then that needs to be done before making the assumption that the dizziness or vertigo is cervicogenic in nature. If that vestibular exam is normal and negative, then the conclusion may be that the dizziness or vertigo that that person is suffering from is being driven by the neck, and doing things like exercises for the neck, treatment to the neck, and education around the dizziness and vertigo that they're experiencing being from the neck may in fact help them get better. Now, this doesn't certainly mean that this is going to help all of the time, but I think, again, it's important to establish where dizziness and vertigo falls into that category of maybe coming from the neck versus it might be something completely different, because these lines of management are completely different. There might be certain medications that the patient may need to take. There might be a certain subset of exercises. This may be something more serious that needs to be investigated and ruled out. So it is really, really important that we're not always just categorizing dizziness and vertigo that's being experienced as either the two most common things being coming from the neck or cervicogenic or BPPV. Those are the two most common scapegoats for dizziness and vertigo. And while these do happen, there are plenty of other causes that we need to consider. So certainly don't, if you're a patient that's experiencing this, be using Google to diagnose yourself with dizziness or vertigo. Definitely get checked out by a qualified person first. If you're unaware of how to navigate this, go to your family doctor and ask them if they are able to assess you. And if they're not, they will certainly refer you on to a series of specialists. This might include an ear, nose, and throat doctor. This might include a neurologist. But the one thing that I will say is there are plenty of answers for you if you're experiencing dizziness and vertigo. This is a very scary symptom to experience, but a large majority of the time, there may be answers that can lead to partial resolution or full resolution of the symptoms that you're experiencing. So certainly get in and speak with somebody that you trust, and hopefully you'll be able to get the guidance on where you need to be. And if you have any questions, then certainly feel free to direct message me and I can hopefully guide you in the right direction of getting you resources. I know on past podcasts, I usually talk about specific exercises that I will use with certain conditions, but I'm going to forego that on this episode just because there are more sinister things that can be the cause of dizziness and vertigo. And I don't want people to be going out and taking any exercises that I'm talking about and doing it on their own. I think that the most important thing here for you is to make sure that you get checked out, rule out those red flags, and then proceed with the right plan of care that will help you get partial or full resolution of your symptoms. But as I said, if you have any questions that I can answer to help you along the way, then feel free to ask. My question for you is, have you suffered or are you currently suffering from dizziness or vertigo? And what has helped you? What diagnosis have you received? And what plan of care has helped you the most? I'd love to know in the comments below. As always, folks, I hope that you found this episode to be of value to you. Have a great Friday and enjoy your weekend. And we will see you in the next one. We'll be right back.